You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
I'm at Norwich University of the Arts, where I'm joined by Professor John Last, the first Vice-Chancellor of the university, given its recent change to university status, a title granted in 2012. John, what does that change for you, or not change for you as an institution?
Well, I think it's a great sort of confirmation, really, for us of the work we've been doing for the past 170 years. It's nice for staff and students to have the designation, and we are taking the opportunity in particular to explain our new status to overseas students who found the former term quite complicated and difficult to understand.
I mean, it was a size thing initially, wasn't it? Initially, a certain number of students, 4,000 was the floor level for being a university. Now it's down to 1,000. Was that the main drive? Was that the main reason, or was this something you were sort of pursuing anyway?
I think we were conscious that in other countries, specialist arts universities, which are relatively small by almost by definition probably, were quite well known and respected. And it was an anomaly that in England you needed to be either very large or you couldn't be a university. And we were very conscious that wasn't very helpful and didn't reflect what we think is the quality of our work. We looked at other places. And so we were very pleased when the conversations began to recognise that if you have good quality standards, if you can demonstrate the same criteria that other people can do, then university designation is appropriate.
So you're the head of an institution that focuses obviously on creative arts design. What's it like leading a university of that type?
Well, I think the strength is that it's a community in which everybody's focused on the same thing. And I do find that the only frustration really at the moment is that there's a discourse, which perhaps the Times Higher also occasionally falls into, where people talk about leading universities, but don't think about leading in the context of the subject. So the universities such as my own and other specialist universities are, I would argue, much more likely to be leading in our subjects. And so I think the phrase has become rather badly used at the moment. And I'm quite keen that people realise that if you wish to study in art, design and media, you should look much more broadly than simply a notion of a league table.
And do you think, how specialised do you think you can go and still be considered a university?
Well, I think it's really that for us, we were fulfilling the requirements of the RAE. We were very pleased with our outcome last time. We're entering the REF. We have very strong application rates. Students do very well. The key things we're asked to do as universities, we're already fulfilling. So we felt that was a better sort of set of things rather than concentrating on number and subject.
So that was the last big change. It's January, I suppose. It's a New Year's resolution,
yes,
sort of time of year. What's the future for NUA? Now the title's in place, what are your plans for the institution over the next year, couple of years?
Well, the next couple of years are quite exciting for us because we celebrate 170 years. We were the Norwich School of Design, set up, interestingly, in support of local industries. We had the Norwich School of Painters, and so we're going to be celebrating our history. And at the same time, a new strategic plan is being produced, which was agreed at the last Governing Council. And that just sets us as trying to operate within a European context, as a specialist university.
What do you mean by European context?
I think we're very aware that it's no longer about just the sort of the UK, and we want to make sure that we establish sort of criteria as to how we might measure ourselves against, you know, European universities and international universities of the arts.
And what about your recruitment? I mean, you say you do very well for applications, but looking at that sort of European field and further afield, what's the sort of demographic of your students? Do you have a lot of overseas students? What's the split?
Well, the target is 10%, which is relatively modest, I think, for the sector. But I think what we're anxious to do is to make sure that when you come to us, you get an experience that the university feels is about why you would come to England, in our case, and get a specialist experience. And so having a mix of cultures, a mix of approaches to the arts is very important to us. But there should be a mix, and it should actually reflect what we believe is important for us operating out of an English context.
And that 10% target, do you know how near you are?
Think we're about two-thirds of the way towards that. And again, it's about selectivity and appropriateness. We are anxious to make sure it's the right student rather than the number of students.
Sure.
Which is the approach we take with UK students also.
The UK students is an interesting one for NUA. If the figures are right, I read in the local press, Last year there was a 17% increase in applications to the university. You didn't enter clearing, so clearly there's no shortage of people from within in the UK applying. Does that make it difficult in terms of things like handling student numbers, making sure you don't go over the your allocated student number?
Well, it's a problem I'm pleased to have, but it is quite difficult. Obviously, we are trying to ensure that we select the best students, and we interview all students with portfolio. So there is a practical issue there about ensuring that students have an opportunity to show their work to us. And it's not a grade-led decision. It's a portfolio-led decision. And then they need to meet a grade threshold.
And, you know, the talking about the sort of getting the student numbers right, you say it's a problem you like to have. Have you been, I guess, fined would be the word in the past for going over?
We have been a little over for the last two or three years. It's a very difficult balancing act to do. And obviously it is more difficult when you have a lot of applicants.
So Willett's recent announcement, well, George Osborne's announcement in his autumn statement that the cap on UK student numbers is going to be lifted long term must have been music to your ears.
I think the Governing Council had, within its new plan, been very keen to try and look at a growth trajectory over the next period. And that was obviously quite complex with an SNC in place. It becomes easier, I think, to plan for future growth now, yes.
But what problems does it give you? Because obviously you would take all the students you could from a financial point of view, but you have to have places to house them, you have to have places to teach them. And with such, you know, courses that have a lot of equipment involved, a lot of space needed to deliver them, that must bring a whole raft of new problems.
Well, I think the first thing is that we have been looking at expanding the campus for the last period, and we have been pursuing an estate strategy that sees us purchasing additional buildings. But the other problem, in a sense you didn't quite touch on it, is that there is, I think, a maximum size for courses, particularly specialist courses with a large amount of equipment needs, in order for students to really feel they're getting the experience that we think we want to give them. And so the temptation which we're resisting is just to expand courses. Rather, we're looking to see, well, what do we think is the right number for each of these awards, to make sure they're robust, to give an internal dialogue between students, to have a cultural mix across nations, but at the same time not become lured into creating a very large institution just because we could. I think we're comfortable that relatively small-scale universities have a place in our diverse UK system, and we wish to be one of those. So we will expand gradually, and with the intention more likely of introducing new subjects rather than just increasing the numbers on the courses we have. Quality of course is probably better for us than increasing size.
Sure. And a big part of that quality must come from sort of practical experience. I've written a few pieces about Norwich University of the Arts recently. One I think was students who designed labels for beer bottles. It must be quite, that's another thing that I suppose an arts university, you're just tying these links with people who actually have made a career out of these sort of areas. Sometimes areas that are overlooked, you know, people focus on science and they say that's where the money is. For creative arts, you know, making sure people have role models and places to go on to must be a big part of it.
I think that the thing about this community which makes it really fascinating to work in is everybody makes something. All the students are actually producing artifacts, and the staff are there to support them. And the majority of staff have themselves been in the creative industries. Some obviously come from a research tradition, but almost all of them are making their own work. And so the developments that we've seen have been in areas like games, art and design, where employability is very high and student outcome is very high. And, for example, the V&A's first games design in residence, very proud to say, is a newer graduate. So we're quite keen to try and link in the professional side, the employability side of creative industries with our students' work. Which is another reason why I think smaller numbers may be helpful, because that's easier to make sure that they can focus on opportunities to work.
And I hear you're saying, is it an ideas factory?
We have an ideas factory. Right. It's something we've had for the past 5 years. The idea is behind that is that what traditionally has happened in arts institutions is that people have worked on briefs from industry, but they're either old briefs or they're sort of made up. And then people would come in and talk about what you might have done had you really done this. And it always struck me and my colleagues here that that's slightly missing the point. The best thing to do is to manage and support students in really doing some work, because that will give them an edge in employability, an edge on the CV, and allow them to see the difference between having a good idea and having an idea which actually can be brought into play in the workplace, with a client, responding to client briefs, adapting, sorting it out. So the Ideas Factory is a mediated agency where academic staff work with staff who've worked in business and creative industry before, with real clients. Mm-hmm. And they have deadlines, and they have the opportunity to respond, and some clients get selected.
Oh, very interesting. I mean, I know as well as your role at the university, you're also, is it vice chair at Guild?
Yes.
HE. Indeed, I met you at the recent conference. We've covered a lot in Times Higher, and I know a lot of people hate the phrase mission groups, about the sort of changing face of those groups of universities. The 94 group, obviously, mm-hmm. recently disbanded. What's the future for Guild HE? Is that something you look at and think, this is a sort of a choppy waters for mission groups at the moment?
Well, I don't think so much about that, but I certainly think that Guild is an expanding organisation, which is probably a better way that I would want to describe it, where specialist institutions are able to talk and share problems, share ideas, and represent themselves quite well to the wider sector. I think that the value of Guild is that helping people understand the diversity of a sector and the strengths that specialist institutions bring to bear.
Well, thanks for talking to me today, Professor John Last. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.